The Best and Overlooked Books of 2018. What a year in books! From blockbuster biographies and memoirs to insightful novels about the human condition, there was no shortage of great reads this year. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today I have a panel of writers with me to share their top picks of the year. We'll discuss novels and nonfiction, books for children and young adults, works by main authors, and whatever else may be on your must-read list. We'll also talk about the themes and trends that surfaced among this year's crop of titles, and maybe mention a few books that were disappointing. And of course, we'll want to hear about your favorite reads of the past year. Grab your pen and paper. Maine Calling's Best and Overlooked Books Show is next. But first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Cindy Hahn, and this is Maine Calling. Tis the season for gift-giving and receiving, and if you're a book lover, you're in luck. It's time for the annual Maine Calling Best and Overlooked Books Show. We'll learn today about some books that probably should end up either on your nightstand or on your wish list. With me in our studio, Jillian French. She's the author of Grit, The Door to January, and The Lies They Tell. Her new book, The Missing Season, comes out in May. Lewis Robinson is the author of the novel Water Dogs and Officer Friendly and other stories. His short fiction and essays have appeared in Tin House, The Missouri Review, Sports Illustrated, and The New York Times Book Review, and NPR's program Selected Shorts. And Josh Bodwell is with us. He's the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. He's also the editor of the new three-volume collection of the works of André Debussy. Thank you all for joining us today. As always, we want to hear from you. Which was your favorite read of 2018? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. And I know all of you are eager to share your favorites, but I was going to start with a little bit of a broader question for you. Kind of the big picture on all the great books that came out this year. Did you see any particular trends in the subject matter or themes that kind of surfaced this year, Jillian?
I can say in the YA world, I saw a real resurgence of realistic contemporary, sort of stealing the crown from fantasy, which was rather refreshing. It's been about two decades of fantasy really topping all the bestsellers lists. And we've seen a lot of mysteries this year, a lot of sort of tales of urban life. It's been very refreshing.
So away from the vampires and
a little bit.
A lot of that used to dominate YA fiction. Okay, great, Josh. What are you seeing out there?
I don't know if it's a trend, but it's the maybe unfortunate reality that the best selling books of the year was the political nonfiction. You know, first Fire and Fury, and then Bob Woodard's Fear, and now Michelle Obama's book, which is different than those two, of course. But political nonfiction, surprisingly, people can't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's the climate we're in, I guess.
Yeah, when I go to a book, I don't want to read about the news right now.
Right, want to escape. What are you seeing, Lewis?
Yeah, actually, that I was just about to say something about the importance of escape these days, and opportunity to connect with, reading is always about, one soul connecting with another soul and, learning about the interiors of others. And so, there are the literary novel is alive and well and is kind of more important than ever. So there were some great ones that came out this year.
Great. And I'm going to put you on the spot first to talk about your favorites. But I'm just wondering, with your writing, you have a certain style and focus to your writing. Do you look for books that resemble yours, or you just read whatever you're interested in?
Yeah, no, I don't think I do. I think my kind of first and foremost prerequisite for a book is that, it has good sentences. So I am looking for, writing that's clean and clear. And I love reading kind of outside of the, genre and style that I write in. So
okay. Yeah. So what topped your list this year?
I think that a book by Lisa Halliday, a first novel called Asymmetry, was probably my favorite book this year.
So that one was on every list that I saw.
Yeah.
What was it about that book?
Well, first of all, I mean, it is superbly written. And I think it also offers some commentary on just the state of American writing right now. Just a quick recap is that it's the first section anyways is about a young editor who strikes up a romantic relationship with an old writer, an old very famous writer who closely resembles Philip Roth. And, you know, that whole generation of writers, Updike and Mailer and Roth, you know, they're all gone now. And Lisa Halliday and her protagonist are kind of rising stars. So this book, you know, is about kind of the changing of the guard and about the it challenges the idea that writers can only write about their own cultural experience too. I think that was like why one other reason why it was hot. The middle section of the book the protagonist is a young Iraq American journalist, and she inhabits that sensibility in a really nuanced and interesting way. So
I read that description and I couldn't figure out how she tied those threads together.
Yeah,
but I guess it's somehow you can't give it away. But
yeah,
it works.
I don't want to spoil it for those who haven't read it. But I think that was another wonderful thing about the book is that the structure of it is kind of a trick, and mm-hmm. it's not revealed really until the end. I think is something that people can talk about, and maybe after they've read it, they can kind of feel like they've got something up on those who haven't read it.
Okay, so, now I have to read that one.
Yeah.
And Jillian, congratulations on your upcoming book. Can you give us a little sneak preview of that? It's called The Missing Season?
That's right, it is. It's set in a small Maine town, and it circles around teens, the local teens who believe in a boogeyman known as the Mumbler, who takes a quote-unquote bad kid every Halloween. And a small group of misfit teens choose to challenge that and find out what is truth and what are lies and that the danger is very real.
You always manage to get Maine in there as almost a character, or the town as a character in the book. Is that the case in this one too?
Yes. It's really important to me to characterize Maine and have it be as authentic as I can make it and let the reader decide for themselves, is it true Maine? I think that's a question that we ask a lot in this state, and it definitely is vital to me to portray this place I'm from as vividly as I can.
And that's a young adult book. What age range is it aiming at?
It'll be 14 and up is what the publisher would say, and I'd hold with that.
But I know you called in during our young adult fiction show that we had, and we learned that adults are the ones reading young adult books.
Quite a few of them, yeah. It's very, very common. I think that wall has kind of come down. It's not seen as so much as forbidden to cross over into sort of the teen nostalgia. We all lived it, and so it really is universal. You know, the coming-of-age experience is universal. So I really think anybody could read it as long as they aren't a real young child.
Right, but good writing is good writing.
Yeah.
So what would your top pick of the year be?
My top pick, I'm going to go into the kitlet corner of things, probably not much of a surprise, would be Sadie by Courtney Summers. This book has been like a bomb going off in YA, and I'd already sort of mentioned the uprise of realistic contemporary in teen. It's been so nice to see it come back because that is my happy place, specifically mystery. And Sadie is most definitely a mystery at its heart. I was already a big fan of Summer's gritty, unapologetically brutal storytelling. She usually highlights an unlikable female protagonist caught in a vortex of misery, which seems inescapable. That's kind of her brand, hearkening back to All the Rage and Some Girls Are, her previous titles. Sadie follows 19-year-old Sadie Hunter, who is searching for the man she believes murdered her sister. And she's on a road trip of vengeance, essentially, tracking down clues so that she can kill this man in question, a former boyfriend of her mother's. Along this road trip, she encounters other dangerous characters. And throughout Sadie's traditional first-person narrative, a true crime podcast script is interwoven, where we learn that this is airing 1 year after Sadie left home and she has never returned. So the reader is essentially following two trails, Sadie's and the host of the podcast, who's trying to discover what ultimately befell Sadie after she ran away in search of her sister's killer. I really thought it was a very fresh, original take and one that served to propel the plot forward. I mean, I couldn't turn the pages fast enough. So bonus points also go to Summers for writing a gutsy ending that didn't tie everything up in the bow, and that's something you don't see a lot in the YA world, and I think it's much needed because it's very true to life.
Sounds pretty dark.
It was. It was very dark, yeah.
But good yeah. Dark, I guess. Okay. All right, we'll hear from Josh now. I know you always have a mile-long list of favorite books.
Sorry.
You want to start? What do you want to start with?
Jillian had this big grin, and she was like, dark, dark.
Dark, she likes dark.
Well, I always, just the way my brain works, I always organize my reading list by genre. But if I had to pick, so I could have a top pick in multiple genres.
No.
Okay, sorry.
That's way too organized.
If I was just going to have top, it would be Elizabeth Strout's Anything is Possible, which is a follow-up to her short novel from a couple years ago, My Name is Lucy Barton. Mm-hmm. And like Olive Kittredge, you know, a loosely linked collection of short stories, Anything is Possible follows that same pattern. It goes back to Lucy Barton's Midwest hometown and is set there. And Lucy isn't super prominent in every story the way that Olive is so central, but her family members are in the community itself. And it's just, you know, I jotted down that it's classic Strout, which is calm, compassionate, and brimming with empathy for her characters. Mm-hmm. And to Lewis's rule, she writes incredibly good sentences.
Yeah, she does. she's an incredible writer.
Yeah, even her spare sentences are so fresh. It's really surprising. I read it right. It was one of those books I read. I probably around the new year of this year, you know. So in making my list, thinking back, okay, this was probably the first book I read of 2018, but nothing surpassed it. And thinking about it again just got me more fired up about her 2019 book, which will be a sequel to Olive Kittredge.
That's exciting. Wow. Everybody's waiting for that. Yeah. Oh, great. So, and you know, again, a Maine author, right? So.
Yeah, Portland-born.
Yeah, we're showcasing them. We're going to go to Melissa Kim now. She's with Island Port Press. She's the editorial director there. Thanks for calling in, Melissa.
Thanks for having me. Hi to Josh and Jillian and Lewis. Thanks for letting me in.
It's like the writerly club here. And I understand there's one book in particular you'd like to recommend. What is it? It's by Elaine Ford. Is that right?
Yes. So it's called This Time Might Be Different. And it's a collection of 15 beautifully written short stories. It came out in March, and so this is what I'd consider one of the best overlooked books of the year. And I think maybe it was overlooked because they're short stories, which maybe you all can relate to a little bit, especially Lewis as a short story writer in his past, you know. And so I think those don't often get as much attention as they need to. And then also possibly, sadly, because Elaine passed away in 2017, about 7 months before the book came out. So if you like sort of character-driven fiction with a strong sense of place, then this is a great collection for you. And also I wanted to mention it because Elaine was she was a great literary figure here in Maine, as well as a professor at the University of Maine. And I know that Jillian was a student of hers, right, Jillian?
Yes, I was. She was amazing. She really was. I feel so, so lucky to have learned from her. She was just such a wealth. She had a wealth of knowledge.
That's great.
Yeah, and it's a lovely collection of stories, some previously published and some newly published. So it's a nice taste of her work and a great flavor of Maine and New England, but any rural small-town community, I think.
Well, great. Melissa, thanks for calling in today. Melissa Kim is the editorial director at Island Port Press. For some other recommendations by Melissa, check out our Made in Maine gift guide, which you can find on our website and Facebook page. She listed a number of other titles there. So Maine authors, that's a whole category in itself. We have a lot of powerhouse authors in this state. Does anyone have any recommendations? I'll start with you, Josh. Highlights? Yeah, well, because you have your finger on the pulse of everyone in Maine who's writing.
Well, I'm just looking. I'm looking through my notes. They are long. You're right.
you now realize.
One of my categories in my nerdily organized list is books on writing that I loved this year.
Right.
I'm sort of always reading one book on writing. Rick Russo published The Destiny Thief this year, which is his essays about writing, writers, and life. It's phenomenal. It's not a didactic craft book.
Uh-huh.
It's Rick's warm, humorous voice and what he's learned about writing over the years. I can't recommend that enough. I'm going to go over here to Lincoln. Payne was supposed to be here with us today, and he sent a list, and he had two main writers on there, so I want to share those. I think Lincoln ended up in Portugal, Lisbon, Portugal, giving a talk, and that's why he's not here. So fair enough. But Lincoln had on his he had on his list Bill Rohrbach's The Girl of the Lake, a book of short stories. We're just talking about short stories. Fantastic. Rambunctious collection. Is that a good word for it?
Sure, yes. Definitely.
Rollicking.
Yes.
And Kate Christensen's new novel that came out this summer, The Last Voyage.
Or The Last Cruise.
The Last Cruise. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Oh, Lincoln had
good
that wrong.
Good catch. Right. The good. Last Cruise.
The Last Cruise.
I'd love
that got a lot of good reviews.
Yeah, actually. I'd love to say just a couple words about that one, if that's okay. Yeah, that is it's a brilliant book. And like all of Kate's work, Kate Christensen's work, it's a super closely observed, human interaction at its base. But then it also offers this great commentary on, you know, what's going on in America today. It's all set on a cruise ship, which kind of is this awesome metaphor for, you know, capitalism run amok and class struggle, because, you know, the servants on the ship live in the kind of underbelly of the ship, and she just really pulls no punches. It's a great, totally absorbing, totally entertaining, just closely observed book. So highly recommend.
Great. And we have an email from Jane. She says, the French author Marguerite Yourcenar, did I butcher that? Yourcenar, wrote the 20th century classic Memoirs of Hadrian right here in Maine. She and her American partner, Grace Frick, lived for decades in Northeast Harbor. An intimate portrait of this literary couple, also written in Maine, came out this year. Joan Howard's We Met in Paris, Grace Frick and Her Life with Marguerite Yourcenar. It's a great read, and it's my favorite book of 2018. Are you familiar with that at all?
I'm not.
Sounds like a good one. So we have so many more suggestions coming in, but we'll just take a quick break right now. When we come back, your comments and questions. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Portland Symphony Orchestra, celebrating the magic of Christmas with conductor Bruce Hangen, December 14th through 23rd. PortlandSymphony.org. And Northern Light Health, healthcare that's Maine-founded, Maine-focused, and Maine-proud. Learn more at MaineMadeUs.com.
The news keeps on coming, so Eat Your Wheaties Friday could be a big day. We expect to get a lot more details on President Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort.
Special counsel Robert Mueller outlines Manafort's alleged crimes. Former FBI Director James Comey testifies on the Hill. And we learn more about how Trump's former lawyer is cooperating with prosecutors. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening on Maine Public Radio.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement has ramped up arrests and detention, pulling out all the stops to deport immigrants here illegally. I'm Matt Katz, filling in for Amy Walter. We explore the growth of ICE and how an obscure agency became a political lightning rod. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI.
The Takeaway debuts tonight at 7 on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Cindy Hahn. Today on the program, the best and overlooked books of 2018. Joining me, Lewis Robinson. He's the author of the novel Water Dogs and Officer Friendly and Other Stories. Jillian French is the author of Grit, The Door to January, and The Lies They Tell. Her new book, The Missing Season, comes out in May. And Josh Bodwell is the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. He's also edited the new 3-volume collection of the works of André Debussy. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. And now on the line with us is Mark Griffin. He's the author of All That Heaven Allows, a biography of Rock Hudson. He's also a former Maine Public employee, and you may have heard him on Fresh Air earlier this week. We'll put a link to that interview on our website and Facebook page. Mark, thanks for calling into our show today.
Thank you so much, Cindy. It's great to be here.
So why did you decide to write a biography of Rock Hudson?
Well, for a number of reasons, actually. Although there had been several books published about Rock Hudson over the years, I personally didn't feel that any of them really took that deep dive, if you will, that Hudson's truly complex and sort of endlessly fascinating life really deserved. And I wanted to carefully and as meticulously as possible explore the unusual circumstances of that life that came before that tragic and untimely death that most of us remember back in the mid-1980s, and really take a very, very close look at it, as well as examine that remarkably durable and multifaceted career, which spanned from the late 1940s right up until almost the moment of Rock's untimely passing in the 1980s. I mean, it's sort of difficult for us to think, you know, show business figures in our here today, gone tomorrow sort of pop culture don't endure like that. They don't remain in the public consciousness or in the spotlight for decades as Rock did. So for someone like Rock Hudson to achieve all of that and to be the number one box office attraction in the world while grappling with the stresses and inner conflicts of being a closeted gay man, while being asked to sort of portray the ultimate heterosexual on movie screens, it just seemed to me that there was more than enough story to be explored there by a biographer. And I just couldn't wait to take that deep dive and get fully immersed in his life and career.
Well, you've certainly gotten a lot of great attention for this book, and I think it's timely. So thank you for sharing that. Since we have you on the line, I don't know if you've had a lot of time to do some pleasure reading while you were researching your book, but do you have one or two favorite books you'd like to mention?
I do. I am a voracious reader, though while I was immersed in writing All That Heaven Allows, I didn't really get a lot of free time to read. But one book that did catch my attention was Maureen Corrigan's So We Read On, How the Great Gatsby Came to Be and Why It Endures. I think this was published back in 2014. And she's interestingly and incidentally the book critic or was for NPR's Fresh Air. I don't know if she still is. But this sort of gave you the whole fascinating back history of why Fitzgerald decided to write The Great Gatsby and why it's now considered one of the crowning achievements in American literature. And that was just sort of a can't-put-it-down reading experience for me.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I'm looking forward to, which I haven't had a chance to read, I hope it ends up under the Christmas tree maybe, is Susan Orlean's The Library book, mm-hmm. which is about that mysterious and very catastrophic fire that occurred at the Los Angeles Public Library. I think it was in 1986, where something like 400,000 books were destroyed. And she uses that as sort of the basis of this sort of a detective story in a way, but it's also a love letter to America's libraries. So can't wait to get my hands on that and read it.
Well, great. I hope someone does give that to you then.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today. Mark Griffin is the author of All That Heaven Allows, a biography of Rock Hudson. And we will go to a call now from Kate calling about a book that she worked with. Is this the poetry anthology, Kate?
Yes, it is. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for joining us. Tell us about that.
Well, it's called Balancing Act 2, and it's a collection, an anthology of 150 poems by 50 contemporary Maine women from all over the state and all ages. And it's just come out, so it hasn't had a chance to be overlooked.
Okay. So it's not overlooked. It's best books, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
And I understand the first balancing act that came out before included poems by our soon-to-be governor, Janet Mills. Is that correct?
That's right. That's absolutely correct. The book came out in 1975. It had the work of 10 women poets mostly from Portland, I think. No, they were from all over Maine. It was a wonderful contribution to Maine Letters at the time. Literal Books has reactivated itself to publish the work of Agnes Bichel, her wonderful novel, The House on Perry Street.
Uh-huh.
And just now, the last couple of days, Balancing Act 2, it's literally hot off the press.
Terrific. Well, thanks for sharing that, Kate. I think Josh wants to weigh in.
I do. I just want to add, Kate missed the lead. December 15th at 2 p.m. at Space Gallery, there's a big launch reading for Balancing Act 2.
Yeah,
there you go. You're teaming
You're
up
welcome.
To promote it. That's great. December 15th at Space Gallery in Portland.
Yeah, so. This one's close to our hearts at MWPA because the formation of Literal Books and the publication of the first Balancing Act in 1975 was one of the instigating situations that led to the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance being formed in 1975. Agnes was one of the co-founders.
Oh, that's so great.
Yeah. So it's very exciting now, almost 45 years later, to have Balancing Act 2.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Kate. And now that we're talking about poets, did anybody have a poetry anthology or anything on their list? Not reading any poetry right now? We'll skip that category. We have plenty of other categories to get to. Actually, how about you? You talked about nonfiction earlier, Josh.
Yeah.
And how there's these, you know, big name power figures that those were the big blockbusters.
Those were the
year.
Big blockbusters, and not what I would go to for reading. I feel like we also need to. Sometimes when we say going to books for escape, I always feel a little sheepish about that because I don't go to read a great literary novel to put my head in the sand to ignore what's going on. I go to learn more and become a better person, to be more reflective about what's going on in the world, not to quote unquote escape it.
Right.
But it is to get away from the screens that seem to be pushing the troubling news on us every day. So a couple books in nonfiction I love this year. One I just finished called The Baltimore Book of the Dead by Marion Winnick. And it's a nonfiction book made up of they're really kind of like vignettes. They're maybe two pages each, sometimes just a page. They're almost like prose poem obituaries. And they're really beautiful. They're all about people that Marion Winnick, the author, knew. She manages to both be frank and honest, but never mean-spirited, to tell the truth about these people, but do it lovingly. They're just totally engrossing. I knew when I was reading on this flight that I was going to read it in one sitting if I didn't stop. So I did, because I really wanted to savor and go back and reread some of these pieces, which all have – they're not named for the people. They're just called, like, The Mensch, 1945 to 2015. They always have the years. And the other nonfiction book I loved this year was a collection of essays called When I First Held You, with this long but descriptive subtitle, 22 critically acclaimed writers talk about the triumphs, challenges, and transformative experience of fatherhood.
Oh, cool.
Very, very cool. So a lot of writers I love, Anthony Doerr, Andre Debuse III, Benjamin Percy, et cetera, all contributed essays about fatherhood. And again, they're not all easy and celebratory. They are about the challenges and transformative part of fatherhood, which is something I think about every day.
You know well. Well, great. Those are good suggestions. You guys want to weigh in on nonfiction category, Lewis?
Yeah. So my favorite nonfiction book of the year, and it marked the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War, is a book by a journalist named Theo Emery called Hellfire Boys. And it's a really fascinating story of the rise of the chemical warfare service in the United States. So the government took over American University, as they were, kind of witnessing the German rise of chemical warfare. And they took over American University and enlisted this team of young chemists to come. So they kicked out the students, and here come the chemists, and there they are to develop weapons. And it's he writes it in such a way that it feels like a novel. They're fascinating characters, and it kind of chronicles the last few years of the First World War. So I loved that book.
Wow, interesting. How about you, Jillian?
I have to fess up that I'm not a big nonfiction reader, but I did read one this year.
Okay, and, we'll go with that one.
It was called This and That, and it's the Bette Davis autobiography. It's an oldie. It's not a new one. It came out before her death, of course, in the early 80s. And I think what struck me most about it was I had read some biographies about her life before. And in her own words, I mean, she's notorious for having such a salty tongue and just being a tough lady through and through. I felt like this autobiography was really in reaction to public comments that her daughter had made about her. And the whole book really kind of read like her trying to bring forth sort of her, the joy she had in motherhood, and how this baby was really bigger, this beautiful daughter she had was really bigger than any of her fame and her movies. Did it come across as genuine? I felt for her, you know, mm-hmm. but that was really what stood out for me. It was also, you know, fascinating to read about, you know, old Hollywood and all of that. But it really felt like a mother who was in pain because she had been attacked by her child.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, thanks for that one. We will go now to Aurelia Scott. She's the contributing editor with Audiophile magazine. She's going to share two of her favorite audiobooks from the past year. Hi, Aurelia.
Hi, Cindy. Thanks so much for taking my call.
Sure. So tell us about what you want to recommend.
Well, Audiophile magazine is a magazine that is devoted to audiobooks. So that's what I wanted to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I'm mentioning a memoir, which is sort of a political memoir, and a mystery. First, Make Trouble, which is a memoir by Cecile Richard. She's the former head of Planned Parenthood. She's a union organizer, and she's also the daughter of the famous governor of Texas, Ann Richards, the woman with the amazing white hairstyle.
Yes.
Yes. And what I loved about this book in general is that I grew up being a good girl, if you will, never wanting to misbehave or get anyone angry at me. And listening to her, and this is why to listen to this book, is it's just like spending time with your best girlfriend who is funny and so smart. And she also makes you brave. She's just fierce on the topic of what it was like growing up and being a rabble-rouser from the seventh grade on. Listening to her voice, she is full of energy, has great enunciation, wonderful pacing. I mean, she's not a professional narrator, but she has a great sense of pacing, and obviously a lot of emotion, which is one of the reasons that it's great to have the author actually read a memoir. So that's my first pick. I really didn't want it to end. I wanted to stay listening to her.
That's a sign of a good one.
It really is. The second one is a mystery, as I said. It's called Lethal White, and it is the fourth in the Cormoran Strike series mm-hmm. by an author known as Robert Galbraith, but also famously otherwise known as J.K. Rowling.
Mm-hmm.
Cormoran Strike is an Afghan veteran, a veteran of the British war in Afghanistan, turned a private investigator. And the book is, the whole series actually so far, is narrated by Robert Glenister. And he is just astonishing. The reason why I would say why to listen instead of read the book is that Glenister is so skilled at creating interesting and believable voices that really reveal personality for everyone, from, say, Strike, who is a heavy smoker and a guy who pants when he gets out of breath, and you really hear that in the voice that Glenister creates for him. His business partner, Robin, has a very different voice. He does everyone from upper crust to regional ones. And he also helps keep everything on track, the narrator. And because I would say, like the Harry Potter books, Rowling's Galbraith books have a lot of threads to them and a lot of pieces. And it's really nice to have the narrator helping us keep track of everything. So those are my two. In fact, you know, I have to admit to you that I'm one chapter away from finishing Lethal White, and I've been doling it out to myself sort of 15 minutes at a time.
Well, so
I don't want it to end.
It's interesting what you mentioned, though, about when you describe the books, because they are audiobooks, that a lot of what you judge them on is the actual audio. What makes a great audiobook?
Well, first, a great audiobook, you have to start as a very good book, if not a great book, at mm-hmm. least a very good book. And then, depending on the genre, I would say with memoir, hearing the voice and emotion of the person who wrote it with someone in who's writing nonfiction, and you're listening to a nonfiction history book, perhaps. Having a narrator who has a wonderful sense of pacing and a really audible interest in the topic that keeps you interested all the way through even the most complex nonfiction book. It's helpful.
Okay.
And then with fiction, oh, sorry, I'll stop.
Oh, that's okay.
It's
obvious that you are enthusiastic about this. So great. Thank you, Aurelia, for calling in. Aurelia Scott is the contributing editor with Audiophile Magazine, and they have an annual Best Of compilation. So we'll post a link to Audiophile's Best Of list on the Maine Calling website and Facebook page. And we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Bangor Savings Bank, helping businesses with local service and decision-making. Bangor Savings Bank, you matter more. Member FDIC. And Highland Green of Topsom, proudly supporting Saturday Afternoon Opera, which airs tomorrow beginning at 12:30 p.m. on Maine Public Classical.
Drug overdose deaths are on the rise around our region, and experts are pointing to methamphetamine as a growing threat.
You think the heroin epidemic is something, you have no clue. Like, everybody's switching to it. The meth.
On Next from the New England News Collaborative, we'll learn about the effects of meth use on the opioid crisis, and we'll learn why the Northeast is warming faster than the rest of the country.
We have to do something about it, and we have to keep working toward it, and we can't give up because there is still time.
Please join us.
Coming up today at 2 on Maine Public Radio. Maine Public Travel is heading next to Italy, to Sicily. Consider joining us next May on another of our Maine Public Travel cultural explorations. You're invited to join Morning Edition host Erwin Gratz and other friends of Maine Public. Our Many Flavors of Sicily 10-day tour will involve sightseeing, tours, lectures, and music that will offer insight and understanding of Sicily and its people. Learn more about Maine Public's Sicily tour by visiting our website, mainepublic.org. Thanks.
Welcome back. I'm Cindy Hahn, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, which were your favorite reads of the past year? My guests are Josh Bodwell, Executive Director of Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance, Jillian French, author of Grit, The Door to January, and The Lies They Tell, and Lewis Robinson, author of the novels Water Dogs and Officer-Friendly Other Stories. Join our conversation. Give us a call. Our number is 1-800-399-3566, and we will go to a caller now. Laura is calling from Litchfield. Hi, Laura. What did you want to share with us?
Well, thank you for taking my call. I've got two nonfiction and two fiction, and I'll read them off real quick. The nonfiction, the first one I read I just loved was Red Notice by Bill Browder, and it's very up to date with what's going on with Russia. It read like a mystery, a thriller. It was wonderful. The other nonfiction was Killers of the Flower Moon by David Gran. And that it was a fascinating history on how the FBI came into being based on crimes being committed against the Osage Indian Nation in Oklahoma. Both of those books were excellent. And for nonfiction, A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles, T-O-W-E-L-S. He also did Rules of Civility. They're his first two books. I can't wait for a third book. He is an excellent writer, and both stories are so different. Anyway, and I'm sorry I'm talking so fast, but all those books were great.
Well, thanks for your enthusiastic recommendations, Laura. We'll jot those down. We will have a list of all of these available on our website. So if you can't keep up with the suggestions, we should have them for you later. And we will go to an email now from Susan. As a parent, I really only read children's books these days, and my absolute favorite this year was a story called A House That Once Was, written by Julie Fogliano and illustrated by Lane Smith. The story beautifully captures the excitement and adventure of childhood exploration, and the illustrations are just gorgeous. So thank you for that suggestion, Susan. And Jillian, did you have any children's books that made your list?
Yes, there is one early reader to middle grade crossover series that I just think really shines. I actually spoke with Lewis briefly before we came in about this author. Her name is Ellen Potter, and she is a Maine author. This series is just phenomenal. She writes about a young Bigfoot and a little boy who they end up having this friendship coming from two very disparate worlds. And it's really about acceptance. I mean, there's a very strong message of acceptance and learning about other cultures woven in with all of this great quirky humor and beautiful illustrations. And I just love them myself, and I really couldn't recommend them high enough to anybody who has an early reader or a middle grade kid who loves things with kind of little funny humor. It kind of has a flavor of the Brian Jakes Redwall series as well. There's a lot in the woods, and sort of the Bigfoot's lifestyle is just, it's hilarious, and Ellen's really the best.
That's great. I read about one very clever picture book, and it's the main author, Ryan T. Higgins. I think it made NPR's best books list. It's called We Don't Eat Our Classmates. And it's got this T-Rex called Penelope Rex who has the habit of consuming her classmates. And I think she spits them out. Anyway, it's apparently a really winning book. So that's nice to hear, especially that he's from Maine. Anyone else with a children's book on their list? Your daughter's too old for that now, Josh, right?
Yeah.
Not a children's book exactly, but graphic book, a comic book story of
novel.
A graphic nonfiction book. What's that called? The comic book story of baseball written by Maine author Alex Irvine. All of the kind of quirky tidbits from the crazy story of baseball and illustrated. It's a fun read and, you know, good for kind of all ages, I'd say.
Great. We have a Facebook comment from the Veterinary and Rehabilitation Center of Cape Elizabeth. Anybody read this year's National Book Award, The Friend by Sigrid Nunez? So good, and with a dog as the main character.
I have not, but I have to look into that. That sounds really fascinating.
Can't go wrong with that. And we have another suggestion here. Let's see. I got to click here. Heartland by Sarah Smarsh, Growing Up in Poverty in Kansas. Another suggestion. These are from Jean. She emailed these in, a whole bunch of them, actually. All You Can Ever Know by Nicole Chung, A Personal Account of Adoption. There Will Be No Miracles Here by Casey Gerald, An Honest, Raw Story of Parental Abandonment and Neglect. Yet He Attends Yale and Harvard. Honest and Self-Deprecating. I'll read her last one here. Becoming Mrs. Lewis by Patty Callahan. It's a love story between Joy Davidman and C.S. Lewis based on correspondence between the two. So thanks for sending those in, Jean. And we will go to a call. Lots of suggestions here. We're going to Cal, calling from Topsom. Hi, Cal. What did you want to say?
Yes, it's Cal Thomas, and I wanted to let the panel know about a book that has been overlooked and just published this late summer. It is my latest novel called Decoy.
Oh, great. What's it about?
It's a thriller. It's in a series of thrillers called Kyle McBride Adventures. And the hero crosses paths with a young student who's been radicalized by a terrorist group in Europe. And he learns about a horrible plan to set off nuclear blasts. And our hero is... draws on his old friends from his Army intelligence days to help him out and try to help prevent an international tragedy.
And that's your own book, then?
Yes, it is.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you, Cal, for calling in and sharing that. The book is called Decoy.
Decoy. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for calling. We will go to one other caller so we can get to people. Robert, calling from Gorham. Hi, Robert. You're on the line. What did you want to talk about?
Thank you. I would like to recommend the book entitled Beautiful Country Burn Again, Democracy, Rebellion, and Revolution. It's written by Ben Fountain, and Ben wrote 2 years ago Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk, which was a highly acclaimed fictional book. This one, unfortunately, is nonfiction, in which Fountain explores how the United States has reached a new, as he calls it, existential crisis, with the first two being the Civil War and the Depression. The third, unfortunately, as he describes it, is Donald Trump.
Uh-huh. Okay. Thanks for the call, Robert. And we will go to Jean, calling now from Yarmouth. Hi, Jean. Did you have a suggestion?
Oh, I am very excited to suggest this book. I bought it at Farmer's Market this summer in Cumberland, and I bought it from the writer who was selling goat cheese. She lives in Somerville, Maine. It's a very well written book with a lot of scholarly references, but so engaging. It's the story of her husband and their young family who've taken over this farm in Somerville, and it interweaves it with all the owners of the farm prior to them, from colonial times all the way up to a few years ago. And it takes in, and it's fascinating in that regard, but also it's a heartwarming story about her and her husband and taking over this farm, and a year, the seasons of the year as they begin to make it work. The author is Kelly Payson Roopchand, and what else can I say? It's just a wonderful, wonderful read.
What was the title of that book?
It's called Birth, Death, and a Tractor.
Birth, Death, and a Tractor. What a very main story that you got it at a farmer's market from the author. Thank you, Jean, for calling.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. So anybody have comments about some of the ones that were just mentioned by the callers? Or we can squeeze in Josh's books to stay away from. Do you want to?
Well, we got to fit in the poetry's more important, actually.
Okay, poetry. We'll get to poetry.
Because we were all like deer in the headlights when you said poetry. Yeah.
Yeah, we're almost at the end, so tell me about poetry.
Okay, so, well, we can't pass whenever former Maine poet laureate Wes McNair has a collection, it's always worth reading. Wes had The Unfastening this year. In his 70s, he's not coasting. Incredibly rich, challenging work. A second book, actually, following closely on our first book, Julia Bausma's brand new book, Midden. It's been out for maybe a month. That's all poetry based on the Malaga Island incident in Maine, where all of the inhabitants there were forcibly removed. I'm not done with that. I've been going through it slowly. There's an example of you're not going to that for escapism. You know, it's intense, serious work that's maybe better understood through poetry than just a nonfiction historical telling of that story. And I also reread a lot of Tom Clark this year, who really tragically died. He was in his late 70s out in Berkeley and was hit by a car. He was sort of a legend poet. He was one of the first poetry editors of the Paris Review, sort of overlapping with the Beats. And his death this year caused me to go back and reread a bunch of his early work from the 60s and 70s.
Great. Well, thanks for sharing that. And we have a message from our colleague here at Maine Public, Caitlin. She suggests Night Moves by Jessica Hopper. Lots of titles coming through here. You guys, we have just a minute or so. Do you want to squeeze in a final plug?
Yeah, I'd like to say something about The Cabin at the End of the World by Paul Tremblay. I read a lot of crime fiction, and I think this falls into the category. It's really a harrowing look at what can happen when the internet, fake news, and religion converge on one unsuspecting family in a remote cabin during what may or may not be the end of the world. When armed strangers set upon the cabin of vacationing Eric, Andrew, and their daughter, 7-year-old Wen, they find themselves trapped, faced with an impossible choice. One member of their family must be sacrificed in order to prevent the apocalypse foretold in the prophetic dreams of their captors. Tremblay's beautiful literary prose really elevated what could have been a horror movie home invasion sort of plot into a deeper examination of the destructive power of belief and how news and the media in general shapes even our most basic decisions. It's heartbreaking. It's baffling. It's a book that never really shows you its true face. And it left me with a lot of questions that I'm still pondering. Overall, it was a chilling, nightmarish ride.
Wow, you do like dark, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
That sounds like great. A gripping one, yeah. Lewis, do you want to have a final say, a quick recommendation?
Let's see. Yeah, I loved the third the third hotel, Laura Vandenberg's book, which is really a zombie book, but it's kind of a sneaky way to explore grief and marriage. That one is a real page turner, unnerving, weird, really well written, great book.
So we've discovered that our panelists all like unnerving books. Well, thank you. We have so much more to talk about. We're going to wrap it up though today. So thank you all for joining us. Jillian French is the author of Grit, The Door to January, The Lies They Tell, and her new book is The Missing Season. Lewis Robinson is author of Water Dogs and Officer Friendly and Other Stories. Josh Bodwell is the executive director of the Maine Writers and Publishers Alliance. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again tonight at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and me. And I'm Cindy Hahn, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.